The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
I'll start the bidding here at £2,500,000.
This one is a beautiful, sensitive, and very alluring portrait. It's being offered at $12 to $18 million, and I think it will do very well.
We said $60,000, and he said, I really think that you should learn a little bit more about art and the things you want to acquire.
At $3,700,000. It's yours, lady. Thank you very much indeed.
And the works exceeded the high estimate, realizing almost $16 million.
Well, sticking with high-end investments and the 1% who can afford to pay out phone book numbers for art, this is an area that, in many ways, my next guest knows a thing or two about. Paul Krugman is a Nobel Prize-winning economist, and he is in Ireland taking part in the Kilkenomics Festival of Economics and Comedy in Kilkenny this weekend, and he joins me now. Paul, you're very welcome to the programme. We were talking about, in a way, the expenditure and the lavish lifestyles of the billionaire plutocrats. You've been writing recently that, in many respects, a lot of them should develop thicker skins or learn to live with being criticised a bit more.
We use, certainly in the States, we use the term snowflake a lot about people who can't stand hearing anything negative about themselves or things they care about, and it's usually being applied to millennials. But the biggest snowflakes out there are the billionaires who find any hint that perhaps they should pay higher taxes, that perhaps not all of their wealth was gained through productive service, absolutely intolerable and go berserk.
This seems to be part of a wider debate that's taking place not only in the United States, but primarily in the US. For example, I just read in the Financial Times on the front page this morning, we have Joseph Stadler, who's head of the ultra high net worth unit at UBS Bank. And he's talking about how the world's billionaires are victims of bad press. And he says, I'm not saying billionaires should be heroes, but at least they should be recognized. And there is a natural tendency today to be critical when it comes to wealth accumulation. There is sometimes a fear that there is a new aristocracy coming. Is that part of the snowflake approach, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, why recognized? I would think that having $1 billion is a kind of recognition. You want to be, you know, praised and lionized on top of that. You know, you've already got the spoils. Now you also want to be made out to be a wonderful person.
Which, it's a problem a lot of people might want to have, though.
Yeah. I mean, some people, you know, some of them are. But, and in fact, it is the case that I think their particular sensitivity comes because so many of today's billionaires, it's very hard to say exactly what they did to get those $1 billion. I mean, yes, some of them are tech entrepreneurs, but an awful lot of them are financial wheeler dealers, and it's not at all clear that they made their $1 billion adding to the sum total of human happiness. They may have done it more by exploiting loopholes. And anyway, the point is that it's entirely reasonable to be somewhat critical of the billionaires, but most important, we need some of their money to pay for people who have not been as fortunate.
I suppose, in a way, that notion that a lot of this money has been made through not the most economically productive activity, such as financial markets and arbitrage and all of that, this comes to something else that feeds into the topic you're talking about in Kilkenny this weekend. Have we reached peak capitalism? Do you think we have?
Well, I think we have in a certain sense. I mean, I don't think that we're going to centrally planned economies. I don't think we're going to, and we're certainly not going to go to an economy in which people do the right thing out of the goodness of their heart all the time, because unfortunately people are people. But we've had this notion that markets are always best, that the profit motive is always the best way to organize everything. And we've been privatizing lots of things that weren't always privatized, and in many areas that doesn't work. It doesn't work well. You wouldn't know, but I do from because I live in it. What a mostly privatized healthcare system is like, and let me tell you, it's not a good thing. A mostly privatized education system is not a good thing. So we probably are at a point where we need to relearn the fact that a significant part of what we do in our lives should not be left up to the market and should not be capitalism.
Do you think that should happen taking what's there already? So, for example, actually renationalizing sections of healthcare or education or other productive businesses? Or is it about saying, well, what's there is there, and it, from now on, we should be much more cautious about privatizing anything in the future?
No, we need some rollbacks. Now, in some ways, the rollbacks are we're not talking about something that would be extreme. And there's a very big debate in the United States about health insurance. If I could start from scratch, I would say we should just have national health insurance. I'm not sure that that's actually a good thing to try for, at least in the short run for the in the U.S., because we've got 160 million people who have private health insurance, and even if the public health insurance would be better, convincing them of that is kind of tricky. But we certainly should be making that an option for people. We need to revitalize, again, I have a very U.S. perspective here. We used to have a very good network of public universities that were very cheap and made it possible to have high, to start poor and still be able to go to college and make something of yourself. And those have become the subsidies going to public education have gone way down, the cost has gone way up. And we need to return to the tradition of good public education. So there's a set of things like that where, it's not just, let's not privatize things that are already public, but in fact, let's revitalize some aspects of the public sector.
Do you think with the presidential election coming up next year, this question of taxing or tackling the 1% in America, when I think back to Obama's original election campaign, there was an expectation that he was going to go after the 1% to a certain extent, and a disappointment in some quarters that he didn't. If anything, under President Trump, having promised to do a lot for the ordinary Joe in the Rust Belt, through his various taxation policies and stock market performance, he's actually done more for the 1%.
Well, yeah. I mean, Obama gets a bit of a bum rap there. He actually did more to tax the 1% than most people realize, although the 1% are quite aware of it. There were some significant tax hikes at the top, but nothing like what, say, Elizabeth Warren would be proposing now. But Trump, sure, Trump posed as the defender of the common man, and his actual agenda has been absolutely pro-plutocrat and anti-worker. There's not a hint of doing anything for ordinary people.
Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize-winning economist, thank you very much for joining us on the program, and enjoy Kilkenny. We'll be back after this ad break.